Dick Gordon, this is The Connection. The Senate Select Committee on Intelligence holds its long-awaited news conference this hour. It's presenting a review of that intelligence which led to the war in Iraq. We'll take you live to Washington when that news conference begins. Till then, a chance to set the stage. For more than a year, the Senate has been investigating the CIA's claims about those mysterious weapons of mass destruction. They were the foundation for the administration's case for war in Iraq. But while the committee is assessing the credibility of the CIA's claims, it is not commenting on how the White House used this information. It's waiting until after the election to do that. The report seems to have already claimed one victim, former CIA Director George Tenet. At a farewell party yesterday, Tenet left his colleagues with a quote from Teddy Roosevelt, a quote designed to counter today's report.
It is not the critic who counts, nor the man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood.
We will hear from our guests and from the senators today, but we also want to hear from you. What questions do you want answered about the case for war, and who do you blame for getting it wrong, the CIA or the White House? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And to help us today, we're joined by Faye Bowers. She is the national security reporter for the Christian Science Monitor, and by Philip Giraldi, who spent 16 years as a CIA staffer in counterterrorism. Thanks, both of you, for being with us to help us on this program.
Good morning.
My pleasure. Good morning.
Faye, let me start with you. You've had access to a quick briefing that was done for reporters about what to look for in the report. What are we to look for here?
That's right. I've heard a couple of things this morning that are coming out of the briefing. And one is that there is a separate, not to anyone's surprise, I'm sure there is a separate majority and minority report at the end. And the majority report states that there was no political pressure exerted on CIA analysts to come up with specific claims about Iraq. The minority report, however, states that there was evidence of political pressure. They say that in their interviews with CIA analysts and with former Director Tenet himself, they stated that all of the visits and the questioning and the various kinds of pressure that was placed on them did create a psychological atmosphere that created some kind of pressure on them.
And Tenet confirms that there was that pressure, at least in some form.
That's what I'm told.
Phil, the interesting thing about this is that it takes us directly into the one area where the senator said they did not want to go, and that is the ground that exists between the White House, how that information was used by the politicians, and what it was that the CIA told them. I was going to ask you, but before Faye told me that, how do you separate the two? And it seems clear now that you can't separate the two.
Well, that's really the point, isn't it? To pretend that there's no linkage between the White House and the CIA in terms of the bad intelligence and how it was used is a bit of a joke. The flaw in the entire process was that the White House basically was setting up policies and then going to the intelligence community to get the intelligence to support it, which is a reverse of the way things should work.
And you're in touch, I know, still with some former colleagues at the CIA. Are they feeling that their own leadership, Tenet and company, rolled over for the White House on this? Or are they feeling like they were bullied by the White House?
Well, there are two George Tenets. There's basically the George Tenet who was the team player who appeared at the UN with Colin Powell and supported the White House and referred to slam dunks and things like that, who very much rolled over for the White House. But then when Tenet decided he was going to leave, a more recent George Tenet, has been in his public statements much more defensive of the agency and much more defensive of its people.
Which has, I think, probably more to do with legacy, right?
Yes, absolutely. He wants to. He's writing the history books, or he's trying to write the history books in a way that's favorable to him.
Faye, this is only really one swing at the intelligence community in a number that we're going to see in the next 10 days, right?
That's right. I think about, according to the 9/11 Commission, they want to release their report early before the Democratic Convention. I think their deadline is July 26th. But recently they've been saying they want to release at least parts of it by July 19th. So that's coming within a week. Then there is this new book that's out by an anonymous CIA agent who is not very kind to the administration, to say the least.
And Phil, that's somebody who you know in the agency?
Yes, in fact, I've interviewed him. I interviewed him last week. And he's a very senior analyst who was responsible for all information on al-Qaeda, very experienced. And to go back to an earlier point you made, he has said very emphatically that analysts at CIA were sent back to their typewriters, as it were, three and four and five times to produce the desired result when the intelligence they were coming out with was not what the White House wanted to see.
And so
that's right, I agree with that. I'm sorry to interrupt, but
no, go ahead,
I've been speaking with this man for 2 years, and he does say that. And the other thing, the point I forgot to make earlier about the pressure on the CIA analysts, I was told this morning, the thing that the report says is that was particularly in the area of terrorism.
Now, one of the notions that's been floated about this report that's about to be released is that there wasn't a lot of dissent, that there was a sort of, I use the word conspiracy not in the sort of classic sense, but some sort of agreement that nobody was going to stand up and say the emperor has no clothes. And I'm surprised that happened within the CIA, Phil. I don't know whether or not I'm misunderstanding about something, the way the agency works.
Well, it works on a number of different levels. If you go back to the basic document issued at the end of 2002, which was called a National Intelligence Estimate on Iraq, you will see that in the full version of the document, there's considerable dissent coming from various elements in the intelligence community about some of its conclusions. The CIA itself was not on board. George Tenet was not on board on the issue of Iraq being connected to al-Qaeda, for example. The issue of that Colin Powell cited in the UN of Iraq possessing drones that could be used to attack and use chemical and biological weapons, the Air Force dissented from that. So there was considerable dissent, but unfortunately the way the document was crafted, you had to look at the footnote on page 80 to discover that dissent.
And Faye, we're also told that this Senate Select Committee report is basically going to say that all the intelligence was wrong, not taking into account the dissent that Phil's just talked about.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that. I don't think every bit of it was wrong. I think, as Phil said, there was considerable dissent within it. There was also dissent on the nuclear weapons issue. Both the State Department Bureau of Intelligence and Resource and the Department of Energy disagreed with the finding on the aluminum tubes. Remember that the ones that were so much discussed that they could be used in centrifuges. In both those departments disagreed on that. And then you remember also, I think beginning back in February, George Tenet really started standing up, I think, for the agency with the speech that he delivered at Georgetown. And he was very clear then in saying that his analysts never once said that Iraq was an imminent threat.
So just to sort of clarify what we are going to hear, Phil, it's really two things that are on the table here. One, the weapons of mass destruction, who knew what, who said what, who believed what, and two, that link between the Ba'athist regime of Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda. Have I got that right?
Well, actually, I think it's a little more complicated than that. I think the real issue is that everyone recognizes that most of the intelligence produced by the intelligence community, not just CIA, was terribly wrong on Iraq. So the next question has to be, well, why did that happen? Which is a kind of a mechanical thing. And the question that immediately comes to mind after that is, well, what are you going to do about it to fix it?
Right. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. We're going to take a call from Wilson, North Carolina. Jim's on the line. Hi, Jim.
Hi. How are you?
I'm well. Are you anticipating the release of this Senate Intelligence Committee report?
Yes, I am. I'm very intrigued by I'll give you why I'm calling, really. I'm a strong, stout Republican of many years. I took it upon myself to go see Fahrenheit 9/11. No matter what you think of the film or the person who wrote the film, it brings up some very interesting questions. And things like connections of the bin Laden family with the Bushes, a lot of different things that it may suggest whether it's true or not. It leads me to believe that, or question, some of the CIA findings or quote-unquote intelligence and the connections politically with the White House. I mean, is this a thing that historically we've seen reflect political feelings and influences on the White House with Tenet and Bush? I mean, help me out here, because it really makes me question some of the things that I'm seeing as a voter on the surface versus what's really happening behind the scenes.
Well, Phil, why don't you help Jim with that? Because it sort of goes back to where we began in that it's difficult to separate the intelligence and the way the politicians use it. But what's new that we're seeing now? Is there something new?
Yeah. Well, yes, there is. Ideally, the director of Central Intelligence is supposed to provide the policymakers with objective intelligence. In this case, even the friends of George Tenet would argue that he became much too close to the White House and to the policymakers in the White House and was much too supportive of the positions that they were taking. And that is exactly what I think Jim is referring to. There's something unseemly about it, where the intelligence is more or less, it's kind of a wag the dog type situation, where the policy is being set and the intelligence is being trimmed to support the position that's already been taken. And I think Tenet's critics would, and even his friends would agree that the wall that should have been between the intelligence and the policymakers was eroded. And it's not normal for it to be that way. This is something that is quite unique to the Tenet-Bush relationship.
So, Jim, if the Moore film raised questions in your mind, are you looking to something like this report and other information that's expected to come out in the weeks and months ahead to give you some harder answers?
Absolutely. I think it's going to be one of the toughest votes that I'm ever going to place in my 38 years. And honestly, I think a comment was just made, very interesting. You know, objective intelligence. Well, how do you measure that? How do you determine that it's objective? I mean, that's a very interesting question in itself. This is objective, we think, solid intelligence. How is that measured? Is there any formula, or is it a hunch?
Well, we'll talk about the politics in just a minute, but perhaps, Phil, just a quick answer from you on how you define that.
Okay, objective intelligence means basically you establish a process whereby the information that you're looking at is what the government would refer to as vetted. You check it out every way you can, and you assess it for its reliability. In the Iraq situation, what we saw was that a lot of information that was very poor was escaping this type of standard because the policymakers wanted to have information that justified what they wanted to do anyway.
All right, Jim, thanks for that call. Quick reminder of where we are right now. The U.S. Senate Select Committee on Intelligence is gathering right now in a room in Washington where they will be releasing a committee report called the Pre-War Intelligence Report. Faye Bowers has had a brief peek ahead at that. There is a majority side and a minority side, despite the fact that it's been called a unanimous report. There is dissent within the report. We'll get a chance to dig into that a little bit later in the program, because we will be going live to Washington to hear the chairman and the vice chairman talk about what's in their report. We will also be taking your questions at 1-800-423-8255 as we look at just what the Senate has discovered about the weapons of mass destruction, as well as links between al-Qaeda and the regime of Saddam Hussein, and what conclusions they're drawing based on that. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. The Senate Select Committee on Intelligence is poised to release its pre-war intelligence report, taking a look at the reasons for the war in Iraq, challenging some of those, questioning them. We will go to Washington for the release of that report live. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. Until they sit down in their chairs, though, a chance for us to talk about the meaning, the implication, and the weight of this report. Phil Giraldi is with me. He's a 16-year CIA veteran in counterterrorism. He now runs his own corporate consulting firm. And Faye Bowers is with us. She's national security reporter for the Christian Science Monitor. And Faye, I want to ask you just a sort of general political question, if you can help me with this. Jim talks about making up his mind based on what he's going to hear in reports like this between now and November the 2nd. How important is this scene in Washington? Are people stopping what they're doing on this Friday to see what's in that report? Is it considered to be something that's really important?
I think so. I think like, you know, most of the things coming out of this Congress these days, though, it's extremely divided. You're going to have the majority and minority report. They're not agreeing on all aspects of it, you know, such as the one you mentioned earlier, that they agreed up front before they even started researching and writing their report, that they wouldn't discuss what, you know, how the intelligence was used by the administration until after November. So you're going to get some information out of this that's going to be very helpful, I think, in terms of assessing intelligence. But I don't think, as Phil has already alluded, you're going to really learn anything new. We basically know the intelligence is wrong. And, you know, that's one of the major conclusions of the report, that just about everything that the CIA assessed in the National Intelligence Estimate last fall on Iraq's weapons of mass destruction programs was wrong, except for their assessment on missiles.
Mm-hmm. All right, 1-800-423-8255 to Carlisle, Massachusetts. Ted is joining us. Hi, Ted.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm well, thanks.
I still think there was a good case for war based on the intelligence not only of the CIA but of other countries. Iraq had 29 UN resolutions unfulfilled. We know they had weapons of mass destruction. The fact that the CIA didn't know exactly where they were is their big failure, but nobody who's ever been there as an inspector has ever said that they think they didn't have any weapons of mass destruction, including David Kay and others. So
there are still, of course, Ted, inspectors there looking for those weapons. Are you expecting something to turn up?
Well, I think eventually they'll find that they either moved them or they're still hidden somewhere in those ammunition dumps, of which there are a couple hundred that cover thousands of acres that have to be searched.
Let's just hear from Phil Giraldi on how that's seen within the intelligence community, whether or not those same expectations are there.
No, I think there is absolutely no expectation within the intelligence community or indeed in the government that any of these weapons are going to be found because they didn't exist. I agree with Ted that there was a considerable consensus that these weapons did exist, but the fact is they don't. And we had scenes like Colin Powell going to the United Nations and showing aerial photographs saying this is specifically where these weapons are located. And that all turned out to be inaccurate information. So, no, I don't expect anything to be found.
Did you know that at the time when Colin Powell was making his case to the Security Council, when all the slides and the recordings were being made, Phil? Were you looking at that going, uh-oh?
Well, I was going, uh-oh, yes. But I was actually assuming that that type of information probably was correct. I knew at the time, as did many people in the intelligence community, that a lot of the information that was being used to support the existence of these programs was being cooked in the sense that it was being what intelligence people refer to as cherry-picked, where you go through a huge amount of information and you pick out all the stuff that supports the position that you want to take. That's what was being done.
Okay, just a reminder to our listeners, we may have to cut to Washington as soon as we get news that the Senate Committee on Intelligence news conference has begun, but I want to try and keep this question before us, and we're going next to Augusta, Georgia. Douglas is joining us. Thanks for calling.
Yes, how you doing?
I'm well.
I'm a soldier, and it's kind of disheartening to me because, you know, whenever decisions are made, you know, like that, my family's affected. You know, like that, I risk my life. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love my country, and I love what I do. I'm a professional at what I do. But it's just that looking at what goes on, I mean, right now I'm thinking, you know, because my commander-in-chief wants to go to war, whether it's justifiable or not, you know, I have to activate. I have to move out. And, you know, it's definitely going to affect my vote. I mean, I am a Democrat, but I did vote Republican. I did vote for Bush. And basically it was more of a moral issue more than anything. And now, you know, it just kind of causes me to kind of ask some harder questions and kind of go, I guess, do a little bit more research.
Did you spend time in Iraq, Douglas?
No, sir. Because, well, everybody can't go. I think that's a question. That, I mean, somebody has to stay back in, like, for defense purposes and everything like that. But, no, I didn't get a chance to go to Iraq.
And if you were called now, what would you say?
I mean, there's nothing to say. I mean, it's because of what I do.
You don't get to say no. I understand that. But I mean, from the first part of what you're saying, you would have some doubts about going based on the information that we know now.
Well, yeah. I mean, well, there's always been doubts about, but I don't believe there was any doubt in anybody's mind that we were going to go to war. I mean, I don't think no one was just like somebody was just fishing around just beyond. I mean, way before we actually went to Iraq, we knew we were going. We knew we were going. I mean, there was just no doubt. It was just, when. I mean, when 9/11 happened, everybody, all my peers, all my leaders know we were going to war. It was just a matter of when.
Douglas, thanks for your call. I want to turn to Faye Bowers, because if we go from all the way back to 9/11, right up until yesterday, there was Homeland Security, Tom Ridge, on television saying, you know, we have word that there are new threats and people need to take cognizance of that. At a point, Faye, it starts to all appear very political.
It does. It certainly has the veneer of that at the very least. But on the other hand, when you think about how the Senate Intelligence Committee and now the Independent Commission and other internal CIA reviews going on are looking at the problems that occurred before 9/11. Why wasn't the intelligence gleaned that was necessary to prevent that attack? Or why weren't the dots connected? I think you can understand a little bit about why the government wants to let the Americans know every little bit of information that they have now, at least that they think is important. You know, in this regard, mm-hmm. it's really, really difficult to tell, because, you know, there is no specific information at all. And it's been a steady stream of intelligence, operatives tell me, both European and American, that they've been receiving since late last fall, especially December, when, if you remember, when the airline flights were canceled between the U.S., Britain, and Saudi Arabia. Since then, they've had this steady stream of what they call, you know, intelligence chatter, and it has not changed, and there's nothing specific, but I don't think there was anything specific before 9/11 either.
Mm-hmm. There has never, certainly in my lifetime, ever been a moment when intelligence questions were so close to the headlines and the way that they're dealt with by whatever politician. I guess, Phil, I'm wondering whether or not you think this, you know, is going to or has already created significant damage to the CIA when every, you know, little flutter of chatter ends up being a news story.
Well, the CIA is a big organization, and it's a bureaucracy, and the damage that's inflicted can be corrected.
How?
The problem with this kind of stuff coming out from Tom Ridge, which is very much political in nature, is that it doesn't help anything. It's the same report, if you look back about 60 days ago, came out then too, and Tom basically made the same comment, oh, we're not going to raise the threat level.
Right.
Well, if he's not raising the threat level, that means he has no specific information. And this is soft intelligence that this is based on.
But you're not saying terrorism is not a threat, is not a real
no.
threat.
I think terrorism is the most serious threat in our time. That is a threat that could destroy us as a nation. I take it that seriously. But I'm just saying we have to be serious about the way we address it. I do not believe, and I have no access to classified information, but I do not believe that the United States government even knows if there's a group of terrorists operating actively in the United States and whether they have any capability to do anything. So this is all very soft intelligence.
Tell me, Faye, whether or not people are looking at the release of this Senate report, as well as, you mentioned, the 9/11 Commission report coming sometime in the next couple of weeks, sort of opening gambits in something that we'll see a major overhaul of intelligence in the United States.
Well, that's certainly the intention of some people, I think, especially the leaders of the 9/11 Commission. I think, you know, they've sort of signaled that they're going to recommend an entire overhaul, including the person at the top, that they would recommend that the DCI, or Director of Central Intelligence, who is over, I guess it is 14 agencies, Phil can correct me on that number if I'm wrong, but that they would make that position a cabinet-level position, so that it would eliminate rivalries between, I think, the CIA especially and the Department of Defense.
Let's go to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, for Beth, who's called in. Hi, Beth.
Hi. Actually, I'm in a campground east of Pittsburgh. I'm calling. I have two questions. One is this report going to show that the intelligence agency, the CIA specifically, has worked differently under this administration than under past administrations? And then my other question is, you know, Harry Truman said the buck stops here, that he took full responsibility for all, you know, the mistakes that were made. Can we anticipate that President Bush is going to do the same thing and say, you know, it happened on my watch, and therefore, you know, I'll take responsibility?
I'm going to divide the questions first to Phil Giroli with the first one. What was there, was the relationship between the CIA and previous administrations any different from what we see today?
Yeah, it was different in that every CIA director, his only client is the president, is the White House. In this case, the relationship was so close, and the agency got so involved in policy implications that it did affect the product. So yes, I think it was different, but it's also something that's correctable. There are ways to fix mm-hmm. that kind of thing by introducing procedures that create a higher wall between the policymakers and the intelligence producers.
And Faye Bowers, the release of this report will not come as any surprise to the White House. They have been laying their own response to it in some way. What about Beth's question about taking responsibility? What are we hearing so far?
I don't think there will be anyone to step forward and say that in this case. I don't think it's going to be any different than in the past, the way the White House has kind of handled all of the controversy over the intelligence, over the battles, over the, you know, the plans to go to war in Iraq, the plans to go to war in Afghanistan, the failures and the successes have all been kind of a bit of back and forth. Remember, you know, the charges about buying uranium or yellow cake from Niger. And, you know, there was a little bit of back and forth between the White House and the CIA, but nobody ever really resolved that issue. I don't think it's going to be done now either.
Beth, quick question for you. These are different times. No administration has ever faced anything like this war on terror. Do you cut George Bush slack based on that?
Do I? I'm sorry, I missed.
I'm just wondering whether or not you acknowledge that this president has something unique to deal with that the country's not seen before.
No, I don't, because I think that we've faced terror in other forms throughout
right.
our history, and that, I guess, that was my original question. You know, did the CIA, the way it related to the White House, it is very different now than it was in previous administrations. Was it working and then it broke? And, you know, has it been broken in the past?
Beth, I'm going to have to stop you now because we are going to Washington. As I've been mentioning throughout the program, this is the moment when the U.S. Senate Select Committee on Intelligence is releasing its report on pre-war intelligence. We'll go to the microphone now where the chairman of that committee, Senator Pat Roberts, Republican from Kansas, is about to address the people there.
Good morning, and thank you for coming. Senator Rockefeller and I want to thank you for taking time out of your schedule to hear our statement. I will make a statement. I will turn to my distinguished vice chairman at that time, and then we'll open it up to questions. A year ago, the Senate Committee on Intelligence made a commitment to the Congress and the American people that we should examine the quality and the quantity of intelligence that led to the war in Iraq. Now, the debate over many aspects of the U.S. liberation of Iraq will likely continue for decades. But one fact is now clear. Before the war, the U.S. intelligence community told the president, as well as the Congress and the public, that Saddam Hussein had stockpiles of chemical and biological weapons, and if left unchecked, would probably have a nuclear weapon during this decade. Well, today we know these assessments were wrong. And as our inquiry will show, they were also unreasonable and largely unsupported by the available intelligence. The report the committee is releasing today seeks to explain how that happened. And I want the American people to know, we both want the American people to know, that the committee's 12-month inquiry into the U.S. intelligence's community's pre-war assessments with regard to Iraq is without precedent in the history of the committee. The committee has looked behind the intelligence community's assessments to evaluate not only the quantity and quality of the intelligence upon which it had based those assessments, but also whether or not those assessments themselves were reasonable. The report contains a detailed and a meticulous recitation of the intelligence reporting and the evolution of the analyses. From the details, a report emerges that is very critical of the intelligence community's performance. This has not been a pleasant task, but it is based on fact. Now, while criticism is never easy to accept, I think professionals understand the need for self-examination. And let me emphasize, the men and women of the intelligence community are first and foremost true and dedicated professionals. Now, this report is long and detailed. I encourage all of you to take the time to digest as much of it as you can. Obviously, while it is too large for either one of us to summarize, I can point out some of the highlights. First of all, most of the key judgments in the October 2002 National Intelligence Estimate on Iraq's WMD programs were either overstated or were not supported by the raw intelligence reporting. Here are some examples of statements from the key judgments. Iraq is reconstituting its nuclear program. Iraq has chemical and biological weapons. Iraq was developing an unmanned aerial vehicle, a UAV, probably intended to deliver biological warfare agents, and all key aspects, research and development and production of Iraq's offensive biological weapons program are active, and that most elements are larger and more advanced than they were before the Gulf War. Now, these are very emphatic statements. Simply put, they were not supported by the intelligence which the community supplied to the committee, and they should not have been included in the NIE. Second, in the committee's view, the intelligence community did not accurately or adequately explain the uncertainties behind the judgments in the October 2002 National Intelligence Estimate to policymakers, both in the executive branch and here on Capitol Hill. Intelligence analysts are charged with interpreting and assessing the intelligence reporting and with clearly conveying to policymakers the difference between what they know, what they don't know, what they think, and then making sure that the policymakers understand that difference. As the report details, they did not do this with respect to the October 2002 NIE. Third, the committee concluded that the intelligence community was suffering from what we call a collective group think, which led analysts and collectors and managers to presume that Iraq had active and growing WMD programs. This group think caused the community to interpret ambiguous evidence, such as the procurement of dual-use technology, as conclusive evidence of the existence of WMD programs. While we did not specifically address it in our report, it is clear that this groupthink also extended to our allies and to the United Nations and several other nations as well, all of whom did believe that Saddam Hussein had active WMD programs. This was a global intelligence failure. Fourth, the committee concluded that in a few significant instances, the analysis in the NIE suffered from what we call a layering effect. Assessments were built or were based on previous judgments without carrying forward the uncertainty of those judgments. This is what we have termed the intelligence assumption train. Layering is a necessary tool for analysts. There's no question about that. However, if ongoing underlying questions and uncertainties are not incorporated into the subsequent intelligence products, then the subsequent assessment can be, unbeknownst to the policymaker, become increasingly inaccurate. In other words, the assumption train simply becomes longer. Fifth, the committee concluded there was a failure by intelligence community managers to adequately encourage analysts to challenge their assumptions, to fully consider alternative arguments, to accurately characterize intelligence reporting, and to counsel analysts who had lost their objectivity. Sixth, the committee concluded that there were significant shortcomings in almost every aspect of the intelligence community's human intelligence collection efforts against the Iraqi WMD target. Most alarmingly, after 1998 and the exit of the UN inspectors, the CIA had no human intelligence sources inside Iraq who were collecting against the WMD target. In addition to this lack of good source reporting, the CIA did not share its sensitive human intelligence reporting. Most, if not all, of these problems stem from a broken corporate culture and poor management and cannot be solved by simply adding funding and also personnel. Seventh, the committee concluded the CIA abused its unique position in the intelligence community to the detriment of this nation's pre-war analysis in regards to Iraq's WMD programs. In a number of cases, the CIA sequestered significant reportable intelligence and prevented information from being shared with all source analysts at other intelligence agencies. This problem also plagued the terrorism analysts as they examined Iraq's links to terrorists. But with respect to Saddam Hussein's regime and his link to terrorists, the committee did find that the CIA judgments were reasonable based on the available intelligence. The agency was also more careful to inform policymakers about uncertainties with their analysis. Finally, the committee found no evidence that the intelligence community's mischaracterization or exaggeration of intelligence on Iraq's weapons of mass destruction capabilities was the result of politics or pressure. In the end, what the President and the Congress used to send the country to war was information that was provided by the intelligence community, and that information was flawed. Well, the question now is, where do we go from here? As I have said before, this report cries out for reform. However, it is incumbent on the committee and the Congress to think responsibly and carefully about the most effective reforms. We must base whatever recommendations we ultimately make on the facts and consider judgment not on expediency or media-generated momentum. We intend for the committee to examine closely all proposals for change, keeping in mind that we should first do no harm and avoid as best we can the law of unintended consequences. Congress should not legislate change merely for the sake of change. We should really direct our actions only against identifiable problems that lend themselves to legislative solutions. With these thoughts in mind, we intend to work with the executive branch, with our counterparts in the House of Representatives, and yes, with the people who are doing good work in the intelligence community to construct an intelligence capability worthy of this great nation and the men and women who perform this difficult and often dangerous work. A final thought before I turn to Vice Chairman Rockefeller. And let me say at this point, Jay, I want to thank you for your perseverance and your dedication and your untiring efforts as we went through difficult times to get this report done. I said it would take 6 months and then 9 months and then a year. And we both worked very hard together, and we reported this report, or we voted to approve it by a unanimous vote, and then we also reported it by a unanimous vote. That would not have happened without the cooperation and the dedication, the hard work, and the teamwork that we have been able to achieve together, and so I thank you for this, sir. In my years on the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, I have traveled around the world and met many of the brave, hardworking men and women of the intelligence community who at times risk their lives to keep us safe. They are dedicated. They are selfless patriots doing their level best to protect each and every one of us. They are, however, in my view, hampered by a flawed system that does not allow them to do their best work or allow us to get to the most value out of that work. We need to honor their toil and sacrifices by giving them an intelligence community worthy of their efforts. This we intend to do, and we will. Senator Rockefeller.
This is Senator Jay Rockefeller, Democrat from West Virginia, Vice Chair of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence.
You take your choice between a very loud noise when I knock it off, or I can put it here. And if the owner of that machine doesn't object, I will proceed. There is simply no question that mistakes leading up to the war in Iraq rank among the most devastating losses and intelligence failures in the history of the nation. The fact is that the administration at all levels, and to some extent us, used bad information to bolster its case for war. And we in Congress would not have authorized that war. We would not have authorized that war with 75 votes if we knew what we know now. Leading up to September 11th, our government didn't connect the dots. In Iraq, we are even more culpable because the dots themselves never existed. Tragically, the intelligence failures set forth in this report will affect our national security for generations to come. Our credibility is diminished. Our standing in the world has never been lower. We have fostered a deep hatred of Americans in the Muslim world, and that will grow. As a direct consequence, our nation is more vulnerable today than ever before. I want to add some remarks about the report and about Chairman Roberts, about the specifics of the report. And I need to tell you that the report, 511 pages, is absolutely outstanding. It is a tribute to the staff. It is a tribute to Chairman Roberts. And as he was kind in saying some things about me, I will do the same with him because they deserve to be said. We had disagreements and differences, but we worked through them. We worked through them because we understood what was at the end of all of this and what the stakes were, which is the very security of the nation. We kept the investigation moving forward. Nobody would have ever guessed that there would have been a unanimous vote on the report and to report the report to the Senate. But it was there. That's not to say that there aren't areas of disagreement. There are, especially on the question of whether the administration pressured the intelligence community to reach predetermined, in my judgment, conclusions. And I have to say that there is a real frustration over what is not in this report, and I don't think was mentioned in Chairman Roberts' statement, and that is about analysts in the intelligence community produce an intelligence product, how is it then shaped or used or misused by the policymakers? Because there is a wall between the world of intelligence, collecting, analyzing, producing, then a wall, and then comes the decision of the policymakers based upon what has to be thoroughly honest and accurate reporting insofar as that is possible. And Chairman Roberts pointed out that sometimes it is not possible, and therefore you have to put in what is uncertain about what you have reported, what your doubts are, what others in the analytical community's doubts might have been, what another intelligence agency's doubts might have been. That's very critical that policymakers get those doubts as well as your intelligence conclusions and product. So, again, there's genuine frustration, and Chairman Roberts and I have discussed this many times, that virtually everything that has to do with the administration has been relegated to phase two. My hope is that we will get this done as soon as possible. Yet even with those disagreements, the report is absolutely first rate. Our investigation was objective, our findings are detailed, and the conclusions are devastating. We found the intelligence judgments regarding Iraq's weapons of mass destruction were not supported by the underlying intelligence. And here my words will parallel in many respects what Chairman Roberts has said. They were not supported by underlying intelligence. The judgments overstated what analysts knew and then failed to explain the uncertainty or uncertainties behind those judgments. In other words, the judgments with the caveats of, we generally feel this way, but there are those in the State Department, Department of Energy, whatever, who feel differently. Aluminum tubes was an example of that. The report points out the intelligence community began with a presumption, as Chairman Roberts has said, that Iraq had the weapons, never questioned the assumption that Iraq had the weapons, and viewed virtually every bit of ambiguous information as supporting the fact that the weapons were there. I just interrupt myself to point out that the head of UNSCOM, Ralph Achaeus, always had as a theory, and still does, that those so-called weapons of mass destruction, which we are still looking for, were in fact left over and simply a result of the 10-year war with Iran, and that all of the rest of it was what UN inspectors and others and us tried to find. Our human intelligence collection, as Pat Roberts has pointed out, was inadequate. Not only did we not have people on the ground in 1998, after 1998, where the inspectors left, but we relied, when they had left, too much on the fragmentary reporting from years before, from the early 90s, from the post-Iran-Iraq war situation. And we're never able to pin anything down. Our report found that the intelligence community's judgments were right on Iraq's ties to terrorists, which is another way of saying that the administration's conclusions were wrong. And that is of the relationship, formal relationship, however you want to describe it, between Iraq and al-Qaeda, and no evidence that existed of Iraq's complicity or assistance in al-Qaeda's terrorist attacks, including 9/11, which through the device of Mohammed Atta and others, the debate continues almost up until 2 months ago, at least on the part of the vice president.
That's Democratic Senator Jay Rockefeller delivering live in Washington his minority report on the U.S. Senate Select Committee intelligence report on pre-war intelligence. Some similarities between what the minority and majority, the Republican and the Democrat side, had to say about this. Both say the conclusions, the intelligence conclusions, were not supported by evidence, but that's about where the agreement ends. The Republican side is saying the flaw was with the intelligence, not with the political interpretation of the intelligence, that it was unsupported by facts, unreasonable and flat wrong. The Democratic side saying quite in an outspoken way, we would not have voted for this war if we had known now what we if we knew then what we know now about the nature of the intelligence. Hard not to see the release of the committee's report coming as it does 3 months and 3 weeks before an election. Some of this will become extremely political, though there are aspects of the report that will be further covered on National Public Radio, and you can listen for that throughout the day. A chance to thank Phil Giraldi, a 16-year counterterrorism veteran of the CIA, who was with us at the beginning of the program, along with Faye Bowers, national security reporter for the Christian Science Monitor. Our program is produced by Anne-Marie Dorning, Catherine Fenollosa, Kelly Jones, Jen Mattson, Virginia Prescott, Christina Russo, and Doug Sugarts. Our interns are Micah Sieber and Nadia Usayev. Tara Murphy's our senior producer. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.